payments for $10,000 to win, and the pride of kissing the cow and lifting the famous milk can. This Saturday and Sunday at Thunder Road, gates open both days at 10 o'clock. Admission is just $25 for Sunday. 2 days for only $30. Kids 12 and under are free. The greatest race of the year, the toughest short track race in America. It's the Milk Bowl. Don't miss it this weekend at Thunder Road.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. How could you not? Yesterday was really one of the best. Coming up on the program this morning, in just a moment here, we're going to talk with Libertarian gubernatorial candidate Dan Feliciano. We would welcome your phone calls throughout our discussion. Welcome your phone calls throughout the program. Here are the phone numbers, 244-1777. That's our local number at Central Vermont. We will also take your calls on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Our White House crew will join us to begin hour number two. We'll chat with them about the big 60 Minutes interview last night with President Obama, basically admitting that he had completely underestimated this group in the Middle East, ISIS or ISIL, depending on which one you want to call it, which has really posed a real diplomatic and strategic dilemma for President Obama. So we'll talk about that coming up later on in the program. Again, our phone number is 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll free 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Dan Feliciano. Dan is running as the Libertarian candidate for governor here in Vermont. Thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. What a great weekend.
Yeah, certainly.
Thanks for having
certainly
me.
Certainly was. So where'd you campaign this weekend?
This weekend I spent a lot of time in Underhill campaigning at the Harvest Festival, greeting a bunch of people there. That was an incredible festival and a huge parade. Had the whole family with us. It was just a great time. And then yesterday, I spent a good portion of the day down in Perkinsville, down by Cavendish, as you know, at the National Hunters and Fishermen's Day. They had a barbecue dinner, and it was a lot of fun. I took my son with me, who's working towards his Eagle Scout, and we did a lot of shooting and eating and having just a great time as a whole. And it was just a spectacular day down there.
Wow, how many gubernatorial candidates yesterday were firing guns? I would suspect you might have been the only one.
I'm not sure.
How much fun are you having?
This has been incredible. The education part has been even more incredible. We've been all, as a hockey dad, as a 10-year-old, you're all over the state. But this has been incredible, getting invited to talk to people, hear about their issues. And a lot of it is actually fun. People are talking to you. They have great ideas for solutions, and they want to know where you stand. So this has been very, very fun for us, just to get our message out and to learn about what other people's concerns and issues are.
You surprised the interest you've gotten from both people and the media?
I am very surprised by it. And I think it's even the national media, TheBlaze.com has picked me up, Fox News has picked me up, and Watchdog.org has picked up the article. And what they keep saying is this is an election this year of more about the principles rather than the party. And they're seeing this across the nation, this trend of people really focusing in on key principles. And I think my key principles really resonated well with everybody, independents as well as Republicans, even the Democrats. So it's just been a lot of fun and a lot of people showing a lot of great interest. And I'm really surprised.
tell me, what are two or three of the principles?
Oh, the one thing is, if on all sides, everyone's concerned, you know, when I say all sides, independents, Republicans, Democrats are concerned about the single payer and what that's going to actually cost. There was a lot of, from the Democratic side, a lot of people were in favor from it in the beginning. But now that, you know, Vermont Health Connect has, you know, quite frankly, been a disaster, and they don't know what the cost is going to be, people are starting to get antsy as they see those numbers start creeping up and start hearing other numbers. And then, of course, total spending. The saddest thing about campaigning is hearing about how many people are losing property and family farms because they can't pay the property taxes. So that to me is a huge issue. And I think with my background in cutting spending in both the federal, state, local, and state governments, you know, that really resonated well with a lot of people.
You're as a profession, you're what's called a turnaround specialist.
Right.
Tell people, what does that mean?
I go into organizations that are having problems, and I teach them how to reduce their costs so they can grow again. A lot of times companies get into, you know, situations where they've gotten maybe too big too quickly, or there's a lot of duplicity. And you see that a lot in federal, state government, where they've done too much and now they're under extreme cost pressures. And what I help them do is identify where the overlap is and mitigate some of that overlap so that they can focus in on their core, do what's their core function, do it well, and reduce their costs.
How'd you learn how to do that?
That was I learned it. It started way back when I was in the Navy. When I was in the Navy, I went to quality school, and that was all about how to improve outcomes and reduce costs. And I must have been 18. I joined the Navy when I was 17, so I must have been like 18 or 19 years old. And I had this thing about how to fix things, how to make things go better, faster, cheaper. And I just followed that all the way through, and ended up majoring in business with a degree in production and operations management and statistics, with an eye about how to identify costs, reduce costs, and improve services. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of people think that as a turnaround consultant, all you do is lay people off. When you go into an organization, you can see there's all this cash that's tied up in different inventories and trucks. Think about in the state, we have tons of trucks that are idle a good portion of the time. We have tons of buildings that are partially full. All that stuff costs money to maintain and run. So if you were to right-size all that stuff to do just basically what you need, you'd be much more efficient, and you don't really have to let anyone go. Those are ongoing expenses that are occurring week, month after month, that you could potentially shed and do something better with, or cut taxes.
You had some pretty big-name clients like Travelers. What were some of the projects you worked on with them?
Yeah, so actually, I'll start with Cigna Healthcare.
Okay.
I'll start with the Medical College of Virginia, actually. I was an employee there in their performance improvement department. And what we were to do there was actually reduce healthcare costs and delivery. So coronary bypasses, for instance, are high dollar item. We wanted to make sure we can reduce the cost and the outcomes of doing a coronary bypass. And we developed this clinical path guideline, we call it, so that we can do the right service at the right setting at the right time. And the outcomes were really good. So from there, I went to work for Cigna Healthcare as an employee during their turnaround, and I did national utilization management. There, we were really monitoring our costs, our inpatient costs, our pharmaceutical costs, and identifying opportunities to reduce those costs and improve our outcomes. One of the things we did early on was these disease management programs, low back pain, diabetes, smoking cessation, because as you probably know, 75% of healthcare costs are chronic illness and disease. What we found is a lot of people weren't following their treatment plans and protocols. And as an insurer, we wanted to make sure they were following those treatment plans, but we can't force people to do anything. We're merely their insurer. So we would send nurses to their house and develop all these programs. Mm-hmm. But quite frankly, many of our problems stem from us not following our treatment and protocol plans that the doctors want us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And at Travelers, I did the same thing. But we did something really interesting at Travelers where you hear about wanting to share medical information and things like that. We developed a standard where all the insurance companies can actually share their data. So you can go to like progressive.com. This isn't an advertisement for them, but they can bang against all these other insurance companies and tell you which rates are cheaper. And then, of course, I went to Aetna Healthcare, where I helped develop their, what they call their straight-through claim processing system. It was probably, in the United States, one of the biggest healthcare IT projects, and that was intended to make sure that we can pay claims quickly to the doctors and making sure they have correct utilization quickly, so we could actually reduce the amount of time it takes to pay a claim and to get a pre-auth. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of people complain about the pre-authorization process and things like that. So that was a really interesting project as well.
We're talking with Dan Feliciano, who's a Libertarian candidate running for governor. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Why did you want to run?
What happened is I was traveling a lot as a consultant, I was working mostly in financial services these last couple of years, big financial services companies. And one day my wife says to me, she goes, you know, our son Daniel's 16. He's going to college soon, and you're on the road quite a bit. He's going to be gone shortly, and we'll never see him again. I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, once he goes to college, he'll never come back. Young kids are not coming back to Vermont to start families. It's too expensive. There's not enough careers for him. And that just irked me. I was like, we're going to live here in Vermont. We chose to live here in Vermont. My wife was raised here in Vermont. We're not going anywhere. And I said, this is a tragic situation. We keep hearing about our young kids leaving. What can we do to ensure that our kids stay? We had to grow the economy, cut spending, all that kind of stuff. I was thinking about, and then I kept waiting for the gubernatorial candidates to come out with a platform that sounded reasonable to me. When I didn't hear anything, I started getting antsy, and I said, you know what? I have to at least start the conversation and throw my hat in the ring and bring these solutions and these concerns of mine to the table as a citizen. I owe it to the state. I owe it to the country to do this kind of stuff, at least speak my voice. We have a responsibility as Vermonters and as Americans to be part of the process, and I decided I would go out there and start campaigning and doing this. And it's hard work, and it's hard on the family. On Saturday, my daughter turned 10 years old, and we're out campaigning and a parade in Underhill, you know. But that's the kind of commitment.
You produced a parade for the kid. What more does she want? It's for you.
I wish I would have thought of that.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. All right, let's talk about healthcare for a moment here. I mean, you're talking about having actually developed and had a successful healthcare IT program. So what went wrong with this website?
Right. You know, it's hard to know what went wrong with the whole website. I know it started out poorly from the beginning. There's a body of knowledge, a project management body of knowledge that people typically follow that assigns ownership. It says, and it's always the client. So in this point, it would be someone in the state that owns the project and is accountable for making the tough calls and prioritizing things as they go wrong. What I think happened there, and it was clear in the documentation, they said no one really owned it. CGI thought the state owned it. The state thought that CGI should be accountable. That's not the case. You know, ultimately, the governor is accountable. He can delegate responsibility, but he's accountable. So there's some fundamental project management, IT project management skills that were never followed about when bugs creep up, when features and functionalities aren't working correctly. I know a lot of people say the timeline was an issue and stuff like that, but that's all the front-end work that's not done well. I've also worked for GE Healthcare IT, developing new products and implementing new products. So that front-end aspect was done poorly, it sounds like. I wasn't there, so it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback and criticize everyone. But they admitted today that they didn't have that project management aspect up front, which helps really set the tone for all the requirements and prioritize what gets developed and how it gets developed in the future. Part of that is a governance structure where there's always going to be issues that creep up. I've been on hundreds of big IT projects. But there's a governance structure that says, here's what we're going to focus in on. And we might agree to eliminate some functionality to make the bigger project product a whole. But I think they were moving so quickly, and they were fragmented to a degree. They never came together as a group to say, all right, here are the issues that I'm having. And if this goes badly, it's going to affect this other part of the software. Mm-hmm. It's tragic because we're $100 million into this, and now we have black screens. And my biggest concern is that when they bring it back online, and I know they're doing a lot of due diligence and testing right now, when you fix something that was some code that was written months ago or even a year ago, and new code is built on top of that. So you have to remember, code is very linear. So you build one piece, and then the next piece builds on top of that code. That goes wrong, it has a ripple effect through the whole system. And my greatest concern was people's personal information and financial information. That's all in the system. So I was like, we need to bring this down and fix it. You know, otherwise people are going to be up. Identity theft is huge, right? That's a big concern.
And I'm not following your concern. The concern is security of the information.
Yeah, the security information. As you build code,
yeah,
and you build code upon other code, it's hard to make sure that there isn't a leak or that some of the code is operating properly and in a secure manner, because it starts making other calls to different subroutines, and that can make other vulnerabilities that weren't there before all of a sudden visible and prone to security violations.
So in your view, it did make sense to take the site down?
It didn't, or did?
It did.
It did make sense, absolutely. I think the site should have been brought down just to secure that information, absolutely.
I had a caller a week or so back that made a really interesting point, who was talking about how we blame CGI and the contractor. But he made the point that he said really one of the fundamental problems was the people in the state who didn't either provide the right information to the contractor or really have the tough for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a valid point?
I think that's a very valid point. The requirements that's called the requirements gathering in the front end, when you gather all the requirements of what you want and how you're going to build it. This is so much of this is, well, a lot of it, this Vermont Health Connect front end isn't all new stuff. It's basically gathering people's personal information or financial information and then understanding the subsidies. But it links to bigger systems. They're linking Vermont Health Connect as a front end, as the entryway to other parts of the system. And I don't think the requirements were really clearly known about what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a valid concern. So if you don't have good requirements up front and you don't know really what you're building, we're going to build a car. Well, are we building a Corvette or Chevette? Two different kinds of cars, right? So one group might go out and start building a Chevette. Another group might go out and start building a Corvette. And then when you try to put it together, it doesn't work.
All right. You seem to know more about this than most people. What would you rate the chances are that this is actually going to be working, given the extent of the problems that they've had for this new open enrollment in November?
It's going to be iffy at best. So the system itself may not be, I don't think the system's going to be up and running, quite frankly. But I think there's other ways to enroll. They're going to have people enrolling through the phone, right? That's going to be very costly. So you'll still be able to enroll in the system. I'm confident that the system's been shut down to the public, but internally, I'm sure it's probably still running and they're creeping through it. But to have the system back online and running confidently, I'm not sure if it's going to be ready. I have little confidence in it, quite frankly.
You know, I was asking somebody the other day whether or not it would be possible to just move on to the federal exchange, and apparently they have the same problems that Vermont have. You can't enter a change of status or anything else. Is that an option or not?
I still think it's an option. I think that the federal exchange at least is up and running, and you can communicate with it, and people are going to be enrolling for the first time. Many people will be enrolling for the first time. And my point is, I've said from the beginning that perhaps we should use the federal exchange. And I know there was concerns that if we moved to the federal exchange, we'd lose some subsidies that we're going to get for our Vermonters. But I think that the cost of running Vermont Health Connect probably exceeds the subsidy amount. So at the end, we might be better off by moving into the federal exchange. No one really knows what those. We keep throwing out the number. I know Governor Shumlin said we're going to lose subsidies. Well, is it $1 million in subsidies? Whereas I bet you it's going to cost over $30 million a year to run Vermont Health Connect. So if it's less than $30 million a year, we might be better off in that federal exchange where there's more options and more choices.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's say you're elected governor. You take office beginning of January here. So what do you do with this mess?
Mm-hmm. I think we move it right into. I think because we have to follow the Affordable Care Act. We're not going to break the law. I'm not going to break the law. I think we move right into the federal. We evaluate. Here's the problem. I keep saying evaluate to see if we should move into the federal exchange. I don't think Vermont Health Connect is going to be up and running, so we'll have no choice at that point of moving into the federal exchange. After we do so, I want to start talking with payers and more payers and insurance companies to see how do we entice them to come into Vermont so that we have more options. The single payer, it'll be interesting to see. By that time, supposedly we'll know the financial cost of single payer, and we all know it's going to be lowballed, and we'll have to see what that's going to cost us. But I'm not a fan of the single payer at all. I believe that people should have a choice in selecting their doctors and where they want to get their services, and single payer has to limit that. So I think we start that negotiation of stopping the single payer and then understanding how we can get more payers to be interested in providing insurance in Vermont, so at least we can start competing on the premium side. We can start having the premium side come down. At the same time, concurrent to that, we need to really work hard with the providers, the doctors, to understand how is it that we can really reduce the cost of healthcare. Not just the premium side of the aspect that the insurance companies, that's a small percentage
right.
of total healthcare. Well, how do we get better disease management, chronic illness programs in place, especially since we're such an aging program, so that we can really cut healthcare costs and make sure our Vermonters, my father-in-law, who's 80-something years old, is healthy and is following his medical protocols to live the most robust life he can.
Why do you say single payer is going to limit who
right.
I get to go to as a doctor or where
right.
I go and get treated?
Well, my PCP has already left the state. So there's going to be a cap on services, and there's going to be a lot of onerous overhead. They're building an electronic healthcare record system that they want, a healthcare information exchange, which a lot of doctors are reluctant to do. So those kind of things, and they're going to set caps on what they're actually going to pay rather than let the market do anything. So people will leave. People will go, doctors will go practice medicine where it's easier to do so.
244-1777 is our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's head over to Moncton Ridge. Fred, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Dan. I think I've got a new fellow to vote for governor. I like the way Dan speaks. He certainly knows his stuff. Dan, where do you stand on the legalization of marijuana? It's a beautiful time of the year for Vermont ganja growers right now, and where do you stand on the legalization or the decriminalization of marijuana? And I'll get off and let you speak.
Thanks for the question. I've said all along that if the bill came across my desk for legalization, decriminalization of marijuana, that I would sign it. My greatest concern, however, though, is I have young children. So I have a 10-year-old girl who rides her bike in the street. I want to make sure that Vermonters are safe. So if the bill came across my desk, I think every gubernatorial candidate said they would sign the bill. But my concern is, let's make sure we can protect Vermonters, especially our children, because, like I said, my daughter rides her bike in the street. That if somebody was high and the cops pull them over, that there's an appropriate test to make sure they're safe to drive and those kind of things. And I understand the protocols are already there, but that's how I feel about it. Additionally, it's not a money grab for me. You know, it's a civil liberties thing for me. So I'm not looking at this as a money grab to offset the state's budgets and our finances. So whatever happens there, we'd have to make I'm concerned because there'd have to be all sorts of, regulation, potential some regulations involved. That we'd have to pay for that. But I'm not looking at this as a money grab in any means, and I want to make sure that all Vermonters, not just my daughter, not just my kids, are safe.
What about other drugs? What about things like heroin?
Let someone else lead the way on that and see what happens. Right now, I think it's legislatively impossible, and I can't support, not right now. Right now is not a good idea for anything like that. I can't see that happening.
Why is it okay for pot and not heroin?
I think that's something that you can do in your home, and it's not as a detrimental drug or something like that. One of the libertarian platform things is people should do as they should do as they want, as long as they don't harm or injure anyone else. But let's look at a phased approach and do what's legislatively possible.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you'd only have 18 months. The way I look at it, the governor has 18 months to get elected and get in office. In those 18 months, my concern is stopping the single payer, cutting spending, reducing property taxes and school choice. There's little room to do anything else, because if you cast a larger net, you're not going to get anything done. So that's not anywhere near the top of my list, quite frankly.
So I go back to the phone. Here we go next to Montpelier. Good morning, Eudora.
Good morning, Mark. Dan, I'm sorry, but I've already voted Democratic. But I love your ideas. But I don't agree with you about heroin. That is a very dangerous drug. But I agree about marijuana. But I'd like to see the Green Mountain Care Board still in existence, honey. You have a good day, you be safe.
Okay. Yeah,
thank
there's
you,
been
ma'am.
Some discussion about some
right.
People feel that the Green Mountain Care Board's too powerful and should be gotten rid of. Where are you on that?
Yeah, I think so too. There's no patient bill of rights associated with the Green Mountain Care Board, and they'll have the ultimate authority of what insurance we get, what it's going to cost, what services are provided to us, and they have no accountability to the people. Additionally, the way it's set up right now, they don't have to answer to the people to provide services. At least in an open with other insurance companies, and people say, well, that's no different than an insurance company. Well, you can change insurance companies. Once you're in that Green Mountain Care Board, you're locked into it, and you're at their mercy, and they're in there for a long time. They're appointed. They're not elected. And I don't think they're getting between you and your doctor. If an insurance company gets between you and your doctor, that's a different story. You can change insurance companies and say, hey, I no longer want to do business with you, but we're going to be stuck with them forever.
So how would you change it? Would you have them elected? Would you have a different board?
I've been thinking a lot about what that structure would like. I understand that there has to be there's some regulatory oversight that we can't get rid of. But as we start looking into it, I think they would just be an overseer of things and less of a policy maker type things. We'd let the insurance companies, you know, insurance companies will follow the protocols and that, you know, that they put in place, but we need to have someone more accountable to the people. And perhaps they could be elected if it's here to stay and we can't legislatively get rid of it. We need to change the structure so that at least patients have a bill of rights, patients have recourse, and that patients, Vermonters, know that they can, that the board's operating in their best interest and not just worried about a budget.
Okay. Am I hearing you right? You think that the insurance companies are accountable to us somehow?
I think I have a choice of insurance companies when I sign up for my health care. If I don't like how they're providing services next enrollment period, I can move on and change providers and change insurance companies and decide what insurance company works best for me.
Really? I mean, you know, you got Blue Cross Blue Shield, you got 90% plus in the market, you got MVP less than 10%. What kind of choice do you really have, Dan?
So I work for a national corporation, so we're self-funded, so we have different insurance companies. But that's one of the other things I'm talking about doing is opening up the marketplace to more insurers, more insurance companies, and finding out why they're not here. I know years ago we had many more insurance companies here. We need to find out what it is that drove them out of the state and bring them back so that they can compete on the insurance side and so that we can have choice. There's all sorts of great insurance products being sold out there. I heard some people that want alternative type medicine products. There's insurance companies that provide that, right? So that might be a plan that you might be, that still follow the law, right? You know, I'm not talking about breaking the law. Follow the Affordable Care Act and provide choice so that you can select the plans that work best for you.
Okay, you're pretty knowledgeable about this stuff. I mean, clearly it's a case that other insurance companies don't feel they can make enough money to be here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, is that fair to say?
I think, our regulatory environment is really restrictive about what you can do and how you practice insurance in here. And I think we need to look at we need to talk to these other insurance companies to find out what makes it so onerous for them that they don't want to do business here, and is there something that makes sense for us to make them want to encourage them to do business here? What is it that we have to change? What is it in our laws? I don't know our insurance laws. I haven't dug into them well enough to understand them, but I know, for instance, when I managed the southwestern part of the United States when I was with Cigna Healthcare, and some of the states had some crazy laws, for instance, where if you wanted to sell insurance in that state, you had to have an open formulary, which meant any prescription is available to the patient, but that's so you can sell other insurance products as well. So we need to understand exactly what it is that's providing this, why insurance companies are resistant or reluctant to do business here.
Well, there's this question about community rating, which requires the companies to essentially charge the same for insurance for all populations.
Right.
Is that an idea that makes sense, or would you get rid of that?
When it came out, I understand that came out from Dick Snelling way back, you know, in the day where he was looking at the group, it was group insurance that it was based on. I think, you know, when we start talking about community rating systems, people always say you're going to throw grandma under the bus and she's going to pay an outrageous fee. You can still modify the rating system so that saying you can have a better distribution of clients or patients within your plan. So I think that's an option that's on the table that needs to be looked at, is how do we change our rating system? Because I think that's part of the problem. But I can't confirm it. I haven't spoken to the other insurance companies to find out exactly what it is that's driving them away.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll get back to your calls. Scott, Dave, we'll get to your calls for Dan Feliciano. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
Folks, Dan Keene here, owner of Lamoille Valley Ford. Business has been crazy during the fall foliage blowout sale at Lamoille Valley. And now, with just a few days left in September, don't miss your chance to get behind the wheel of a new monster value car or truck and save big. Right now, you can buy any new car or SUV in stock at Lamoille Valley Ford and get a $1,000 gas card or discount of equal value, or double your gas card savings to $2,000 on any new F-Series truck in stock. Savings mean nothing if you don't find the vehicle you want, and selection means less if the vehicle you want isn't affordable. At Lamoille Valley Ford, we know selection and savings add up to your satisfaction, and we want your business. So drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Hardwick and Lamoille Valley Ford. Hurry in and get up to a $2,000 gas card during the final days of the Fall Foliage Blowout Sale going on right now at Lamoille Valley Ford.
Hi, this is Rich Harvey of Montpelier Pharmacy and Waterbury Pharmacy. When you shop at local businesses, you support those businesses, but what you may not realize is that you're supporting many other local businesses. We buy more than 90% of our supplies from Burlington Drug in Milton, Vermont, because we keep the money in Vermont. More jobs are created here. When you buy from a national chain, most of the money goes out of state and stays there. And the next time you're at a fundraiser or a local event, it's usually local companies who are the main supporters of these events. Neighbors helping neighbors. So buy local. I'd like to personally say thank you to all of you who support us as we continue to grow. If you have questions about your prescriptions, give us a call at Montpelier Pharmacy, 223-4633, or Waterbury Pharmacy, 244-7701. Locally owned and very happy to be independent. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Yvonne from VSECU, a credit union for everybody in Vermont. At VSECU, our mortgage rates are still low, and that includes interest rates on home equity lines of credit. A home equity line of credit can be used for lots of different things like unexpected expenses, home improvements, funding a college education, or even providing a future cushion just in case you have tough times. It might make sense for you to open one when you have a job and your finances are in good shape. That way, if you do run into financial difficulties in the future, you will still have access to the money quickly and easily. Now, a home equity line of credit is not meant to be a replacement for your emergency fund, but it could be a great addition to your financial resources in the future if you end up needing it. Applying online is easy at vsecu.com.
This credit union is federally insured by the NCUA and is an equal housing opportunity lender.
Hey, just tilt your head a little to the left and hold it. That's good. Now smile and say cheese.
Cheese! How do I look? Did you get my best side? Is it calendar material?
We won't know until all the votes are counted, Ted. Just be patient.
Guinness and his gang of very toothy pals are smiling from ear to ear and mugging for the camera because they're vying for a page on the official 2015 One-Stop Country Pet Supply Pet Calendar. You can give your pet a chance, too. Now through September 30th, just take a photo of your pet, any pet, then upload the photo to onestopcountrypet.com or drop it off at the store. Between October 1st and October 12th, customers will vote for the top 20 photos. From those, the top 12 vote-getters will each be featured with their own month on the 2015 calendar. They're cute, they're cuddly, they're worthy of a pinup. It's the One-Stop Country Pet Supply Pet Photo Contest at all One Stop Country Pet Supply stores, Putney Road, Brattleboro, and the Twin City Plaza in Barrie, Vermont, and Emerald Street in the center at King.
Continue our discussion with Dan Feliciano here in a moment. Let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our good friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-321-0815. That's 1-888-321-0815. Their web presence, you can guess, gmavt.net. They are a division of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. All right, let's go to the phone. Dave, good morning. How's it going?
Oh, good morning, Mark. I'm listening, Mr. Feliciano. I have a vague memory of what Ruth Dwyer said, why the insurance companies. I'm getting older, so maybe these things aren't. But I remember vaguely, Mark, first saying we had 40 insurance carriers, and we went down to three all at once because, and that was in 99, because the legislature passed something saying that the insurance carriers had to cover mental health counseling, and when the guys come out of jail, you know, DWI counseling and correctional counseling and everything like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I'm coming up on my brain computer when I'm hearing him talking about this. I remember carrying on about this, about the whole vaguely. Back then, I remember these things somehow.
Yeah, there was some discussion about mental health. bigger issue that Ruth Dwyer and others have talked about was the thing we were just talking about with community rating. But I'm going to let Dan respond.
I think that's what it was. I'm just trying to answer. He's the one who talked to me. I think that's what it was about. So I'll let you guys.
Okay.
I just wanted to throw it in there. Have a good day,
thanks.
Mark.
Well, thanks for the call. A lot of insurance companies do cover those services right now. But once again, I think if that's the decision that Vermont decided for their insurance company, that the healthcare insurance companies need to provide those services, I still think there's opportunity. There has to be something besides that, those few changes that drove everyone out of business, or not out of business, but out of the state, should I say. So I still think there's opportunity to revisit this issue. If we're talking it was 1999, that's a long time ago, and I think the healthcare insurance companies have grown, we have grown, and we probably understand we both made some mistakes and some rash decisions about how we went about this, but we need to find out why we went down to 3.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Northfield. Scott, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I can't quite hear you that well, but anyways, let me try to turn this up.
I'll speak up.
There we go. Anyways, Mr. Feliciano, I beg to differ with you to some point in regards to marijuana and driving. I imagine if you check the statistics, alcohol is more involved in other harder substances are more accident prone. I believe the whole state is up in arms about how to collect money from tickets from people who are under the influence of marijuana or what have you, marijuana mostly. And my son-in-law's a state trooper in Virginia, and generally, from what I understand, they don't press that as much as Vermont seems to be doing so.
All right, let me have a comment. Thanks, Scott.
My whole point is I want to make sure that Vermonters are safe and our kids are safe, you know, out playing in the streets and things like that. So, you know, I just want to make sure that when we pass laws and legislation that, you know, driving and the potential impact of harming others, that we can mitigate that. So I understand your concern and that there's other things that potentially are more dangerous. Maybe they are, but my first concern still is protecting Vermonters, and at the same time, I want to make sure that people have, you know, the personal liberties, you know, to do as they choose to do, as long as they don't harm anyone else.
I want to talk about state spending, because you've described the governor as being basically a drunken sailor. The state of Vermont does not have a revenue problem, it has a spending problem. So I think people are dying to hear, tell me two or three things where you would cut.
Yeah. So I've been looking hard at the budget and trying to find places where to cut. So the two largest places, of course, if you apply what we call the 80-20 rule, you have, you know, if you want to hunt ducks, you have to go where the ducks are. It's the Agency of Human Services and the education. I think there's lots of opportunities to understand what the overlap is in the services that they're providing. Right now, people say there's transparency and you can look at the books. I've been looking at the financial statements and trying to match those up to the organization to understand what the organizations are doing. So I think I would first hone in on those two areas, find the duplicity, find out what activities are doing that are not core to their mission. And you see that all the time where, you know, organizations grow and grow and grow, and they think they're doing the right thing, and they cover more, they provide more and more services that aren't core to what they do. So I would start there by looking at how the organizations are aligned, what their budgets are, and then I make a tough choice. These are the core services that we can afford to provide, and this is how we're going to do it. We need to make a decision about what the services are we're going to provide at a state, because right now we're taxing ourselves into non-existence. I really believe we do have a spending problem. You have to look at it. Our budget's been going up on average over 5% every year. That's a lot of money.
Okay, but if you haven't looked into it yet and you don't really know where you'd want to cut yet, how do you even know that there is that problem?
Right, so this is where, a person called me yesterday morning, irate, saying, you didn't give me any specifics about where you would cut funds. My experience has been in both the private and public sector, and I'm sure you have a rule of thumb here, Mark, about how someone's going to interview.
877-291-8255. I was very interested. You mentioned your daughter a couple of times. You celebrated her birthday over the weekend. You had an interesting experience because of some of the challenges that your daughter had in interacting with the healthcare system. What were the problems that you ran into?
So just sort of stress out for all the callers to be clear, as I have a daughter with autism. She's 14 years old, and she's absolutely gorgeous, and she's the apple of my father-in-law's eye. When she was born, we had to get a diagnosis for her, and that became, you know, it's very difficult to navigate the system and understand and find the doctors that can provide their appropriate diagnosis. Some doctors are better than others, and my wife, bless her heart, she did everything possible to talk to the insurance companies, find out what treatments and tests we can do, and move on. We were fortunate to have really good insurance where they actually paid for us to go to Johns Hopkins. They paid for us to go to the Children's Medical Center and try these new treatments, these new therapies, these new ways of looking for diagnosis. But it takes work because, as everything else, people were more inclined to say no. It wasn't until we had another insurance company that started seeing, because to be honest with you people, all Vermonters that are listening here, I'm a high utilizer of healthcare. Not only have I worked in the industry, but with my daughter, I'm a high utilizer. But as our bills started racking up, the insurance company noted it, and they assigned us a personal case manager who was a nurse to say, I recommend we do these services, this testing, so that we can diagnose your daughter to get the right treatment. It was very proactive. It was an incredible thing, and that's some of the challenges we have. But you're going to have to, you know, if you have a special needs child like I do, you're going to have to advocate strongly, not only in the medical field, but everywhere, in schools, in society, and elsewhere.
So how did having a daughter with autism change your life?
It really changes. It changes your life in a significant way. My daughter is, quite frankly, not aware of time. So if you want to get somewhere, especially if you're campaigning, you need to make sure you're getting packed up early and you're getting on the road. But it gives you a greater appreciation for people and the diversity of people. We went to one doctor that said she'd never walk. A year later, we went back to that same doctor's office. She walked into the doctor's office. So people are pretty crazy. And let me tie this back to the education system. And, you know, I often, you know, I talk a lot about school choice, and they say that NEA, the union, will never go for it. When my daughter graduated from eighth grade this year, they were given all these academic awards to all the eighth grade kids. My daughter got an academic achievement award for social studies, for making people happy, for bringing joy to the classroom. As the teacher was reading off the award, the teacher was hysterically weeping, as well as the audience. So the diversity of having children like this in the classroom and the appreciation that the kids are so good to her, it's absolutely amazing. So
win-win, as they say. Talk about property taxes for a moment here. So what's your idea?
Yeah, so I still come back to, we need to cut spending, and I think cutting spending trickles down to property taxes, but I really think we need to look at school choice and charter schools. And I think if we use the Cleveland vouchering system, where 80% of the money allotted to a child follows the child to any school they choose to go to, that'll create a competitive environment, because schools that are losing students to other districts will start to compete and bring up their programs, or maybe create a different niche program. So back to my daughter and the education system. When we moved back here, there was only two communities that were really ready to handle my daughter, her educational needs. So we were, we had to buy a home in one of those two areas that we were looking at. If we had school choice, I could have lived out much further in the country and taken my daughter to another school that had the services. So I think just by providing school choice, it creates a competition among the schools. Schools will create niche programs for niche students that people will want to go to. And I think overall, you'll start seeing classroom sizes get larger, outcomes get bigger. And it's been demonstrated. There's a lot, if you're really interested in understanding more about it, it's the Cleveland vouchering system. And there's been some great reports about how outcomes have improved in those schools that have school choice and the other schools that, you know, originally were challenged. And then it talks about property values. Property values in those areas are 5.6 or 7% higher than other areas. And there's larger classroom sizes. Imagine
about ready to come up and cause some trouble up there in your great, wonderful Fremont state. I leave on a plane actually tomorrow for 2 weeks. I'm going to make it really short and sweet. There was a gentleman that called in about marijuana and an issue surrounding that, and how he didn't know if that was a primary cause of accidents on the road. I'm wondering about this Larry Fried thing, this ex-FBI guy. You know, he crossed the road, and he had a motorbike, and he had three cars have to avoid him. He could have killed somebody, and the cops are not even asking what's going on. WCAX just published a report on what he said at the accident. He said he didn't get enough sleep the night before, and he didn't even remember leaving his house in Barnard. I mean, my goodness, there's got to be something going on there. I don't know why we can't look at stuff like this, too, because that could have been a very serious, deadly accident. Now, in terms of the charter schools, you've come home to my wheelhouse. I really enjoy that concept. I just wish I had some long-term data on it. One thing I have heard is after Katrina, the public school system down in Louisiana, down in the New Orleans area, was almost completely supplanted by that kind of a system. And they say, at least some of the reports, they're very positive about that kind of an educational system. So anyway, thank you, Mark, and
thank
you, guest. And I hope he does well in the election, because basically Mr. Shumlin is not one of my favorites.
I mean, he's talking about the Louis Freeh case, the FBI director. And also, I would add, too, to that, I mean, in Vermont, there's been a case in Burlington. They had two schools that were on the cusp of being closed, and then they've now turned into charter schools, and they're two of the more popular schools out there. And my question on this, how do you do school choice? Do you just open it up and say everybody can go wherever you want, or do you do it from the ground up, or what?
I think, first of all, we have school choice in Vermont, right? So in the Northeast Kingdom.
Right.
So we're talking about expanding it. And I always get, you know, people say, we already have school choice. We do have school choice. We expand it. I think we leave it to the communities to figure out how that's going to work. And so the goal is to have school choice. The exact strategy about how we get there, I'm sure we'll get together with the local communities and understand what's the best approach. And I'm including the NEA in this. We can't do this with the NEA, because I don't think they're as mean as people make them out to be, to help us design a system that provides the school choice and that we can transition to it in a sound way, where we're not like just doing it overnight and that it falls on its face. We want to roll this out in a deliberate manner to make sure it's successful. And more importantly, if it doesn't work, we need to have a strategy to go back, right? So we're saying, I think this will work great, but more importantly, I think we need to have an exit strategy as well. So if it didn't work, try something differently.
Well, let's go back to this healthcare question here for a moment. You say you want to bring more competition in, that's the way you want to try to help bring down costs. But there isn't competition right now. And you're talking about looking at some of the regulations that might knock that down. If there were an easy solution to provide more competition, don't you think somebody would have already come up with it?
I'm not sure. I don't know why we haven't, you know, I never hear about legislative bills to increase competition. It's always reduce competition and add more regulation. So I don't think we've done a good job of analyzing that and exploring other alternatives. There's lots of alternatives. And when I talk about insurance companies, that's a small piece of the pie, is that insurance premium. So I look at it two ways. You have what people are paying for insurance and the actual cost of healthcare itself. And right now we seem to be focused on the insurance amount that we're paying, and not the big caboodle. The big thing is the healthcare cost side of the house.
Okay, but there is discussion. There's you know, the blueprint for health. There's talk about changing from fee for service to some other more holistic way to do it. So what about that fee for service? Can that be changed?
I think fee for service can be changed and improved. Approved upon. There's already, in some states, they're requiring healthcare providers to provide cost. You have to have an advertised cost for your top 50 procedures, right? So that's a good way of getting the ball moving, because there's doctors now competing on cost. Just think about laser treatments. I spent a lot of time working at the Pentagon, consulting, reducing costs at the Pentagon, and you couldn't drive past a billboard that had laser treatments. You know, and as you go further and further into D.C., they got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. But I think once, if we can do something like that to start displaying those costs and help make the doctors, hey, this is what it's going to cost us, and make consumers smarter. Right now, there's no need. the next soccer that happens to be available.
Right. This question about knowing what the cost is, though, even on something like LASIX, I guess I would argue that I'd rather spend a little more money and go to the best qualified person. At some point in my life, I am going to have open heart surgery. I don't care what it costs. So what difference is it going to make for me to know that information?
Well, I think I think in the future there's still going to be co-pays, and I think that there's going to be some cost shifting to make people more price conscious about what they're doing. Right? I'd love to have a shiny brand new car. If we came in here and said, go on the dealership lot, pick out any car, and then we'll bill you later. It's a different story, right? But I think there needs to be some sort of healthcare spending account type situation where people understand what these costs are and are more accountable, you know, to making the decision. So if you want to pay a little more, guess what? You'll have to pay. If you want a better doctor that you believe is a better doctor and that doctor costs a little more, well, guess what? You'll have to pay something along those lines.
So, Dan, why do you think this state is so heavily controlled by Democrats?
I feel like that's a I can go a lot of places with that. I think the way the politics are playing out is that people are really starting. I think the Democrats have done a good job of solidifying their ground force and making issues more less about personal responsibility and more about a social problem. I truly believe that people need to be more responsible and accountable for their actions and outcomes, and that as such, you reap the benefits or the consequences of those decisions. So I think the Democrats have done a great job mobilizing their ground troops and getting the vote out and creating, quite frankly, what I consider scare tactics and creating this culture almost of learned helplessness, like there's nothing I can do, I need the government to help me, whereas I'd rather have people say, I'll help myself and I'll maintain my liberties. I think we're sacrificing our personal liberties and freedoms and choices for the illusion of government help and control.
Thanks for coming in. Your website?
DanFeliciano.com, and you can find me on Facebook, Dan Feliciano for Vermont Governor.
That's Dan Feliciano. He's the Libertarian candidate running for governor. We'll take a break here for news. We'll be back. We'll check in with our White House crew to begin hour number two. We'll take your calls the rest of the way. Love to hear from you. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. Keep your dial right here. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, 96.5.